Mr. Herman.
Poop again! Party on, dude!
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up!
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. This is Steven, and as you can all see, we have another Sucktastic Cinema re-release for you. We were planning on recording our 90s Hockey Part 2 episode with Joe Gilbert and Chris Haney, our pals from the From the Point podcast, but due to an unfortunate personal event with one of our guests, we were unable to record with them. Matt and I planned on doing the year 2000 in the interim, but we decided just to take a week off. We've been running hard since the beginning of the year and need a little rest before we put boots to the ground again for another big themed month in May. All that being said, for all you Radcasters and From the Point fanatics, we have your fix of the four of us. We went into the Sucktastic archives and pulled the first episode we all recorded together, as we sat down to discuss another failed film adaptation of a video game, the 1994 JCVD-led flick Street Fighter, and it's coming at you right now.
And now for our feature presentation.
Street Fighter was released, Street Fighter the movie, I guess I should say,
yes,
was released December 23rd, 1994.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Directed by Stephen E. D'Souza, who wrote Die Hard and Predator.
Yeah, Commando. Commando. 48 Hours.
Yeah. So high, at least writing acumen, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme as William Guile, where if you listen to the Radcast, we had a Jean-Claude January,
yes,
which we devoted to all Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, which we more than likely will resurrect for Sucktastic.
Yeah.
Raul Julia as M. Bison, Ming-Na Wen as Chun-Li, Damian Chapa as Ken, Kylie Minogue as Cammy, Byron Mann as Ryu, Roshan Seth as Dalsum, Andrew Bryniarski as Zangief.
Too many characters.
Yeah, and there's still more here. Grand L. Bush as Balrog, Pierre Tue Sosopo as E. Honda, Miguel A. Nunez Jr. as DJ, Jay Tavare as Vega, Wes Studi as Sagat, Greg Wainwater as T-Hawk, and Robert Mamone as Carlos Blanca. A box office of $99.4 million on a $35 million budget.
So it made money.
It made money, unfortunately.
The very rare box office release,
yes,
on this show.
But if this movie didn't make money, who knows if they would have... Actually, I think they're already in the midst of making Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
So never mind. F this movie.
Yeah.
But with that being said, like we said at the beginning, we have two very special
yes,
guests with us. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us, very good friends of ours. They host the From the Point podcast, which specializes on St. Louis Blues hockey. And one of them was on the Radcast with us a couple times, if you listen to those episodes on 1992 and Arcades, which we did with a mutual friend of ours, Fred Ford. They're both with us right now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Chris Haney and Joe Gilbert.
Hello, boys.
Hi, guys.
Hello,
hey,
everybody.
Hey. Welcome to the show. Excited to see you guys. Haven't seen you guys in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to see you. Excited to be here. I really need to tear into this movie.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
That's what we want. Sometimes we're a little scared, not scared, but we get a little apprehensive of guests sometimes because sometimes we have guests that kind of lay back and wait to be prompted or don't know when to jump in. And sometimes we have guests that are like full on go with the flow. Hey, I have shit to say.
Yeah.
And I don't care what your format is, I'm going to say it. And I can tell this is going to be one of those episodes with you guys. Please do. Joe, what say you?
I have a feeling that I'm probably going to be very much in the same boat here, especially for the fact that, well, I won't get too far ahead of myself.
All right.
I have some things to say, especially towards the end.
I am so pumped that we have mm-hmm. guests that are, not that we don't usually have guests that bring things to the table, but
oh, we always do.
Ready to go.
Yes. Especially since we, Matt and I, are not super familiar with the Street Fighter video games.
We were Mortal Kombat kids. Yeah,
especially not Street Fighter 2, which this the movie itself is
loosely based on,
which we'll get into kind of.
Chris is cracking his neck. He's ready.
Yeah. but
it's go time.
If you guys are here for Chris and Joe, welcome. Hopefully you can stick around. We also have a segment on the show called What Was on the VHS?
So welcome, Sinner.
Yes. Guys, would you like to know what was on the Street Fighter VHS?
Oh, I'm very, very curious.
Okay, so on the Street Fighter movie VHS, Darkman 2, Return of Durant.
I don't know who Durant is, so I'm going to assume he was in the first.
It's not Kevin Durant.
No, of course not, who just signed an extension with the Brooklyn Nets. Just a little breaking news, everyone. I know you're here for our sports breaking news, so there it is.
You have filled our sports quota. Thank you.
Unless it's a sports movie, we have a very specific quota.
An advertisement for Street Fighter, the movie, the game, which is a mouthful.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
For Street Fighter, the movie, the game.
Yeah.
Spaceball's the flamethrower.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For Sega Saturn and the Sony PlayStation, which was new at the time.
Mm-hmm.
An advertisement for Street Fighter the album, which has a lot of hip hop art. It's a lot of hip hop.
Oh yeah, well,
in fact,
I think Ice-T does a song.
Yeah,
for this,
in fact,
for
I think it's all rap, which is cool.
Nice.
Coming to theaters, Waterworld. So one big
cool. You want to talk about a giant budget and something that didn't? It didn't make its money back, did it? That's a pretty big.
No,
flop.
It was a flop.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the biggest in the black movies that's ever been made, if mm-hmm. not the biggest. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's even if you consider the fact that they marketed the shitload out of it too. Because I remember there was like an arcade game. Where was I? I remember it was like 1995. It was at the Lake of the Ozarks with my family. And there was an arcade machine next to Mortal Kombat 3, which had just come out.
Yes.
And nobody was playing that, and I didn't even want to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of scared about how craptastic that was going to be.
Yeah.
You didn't want to touch Waterworld or MK3?
Oh, I touched MK3.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I touched it with every part of my body. Oh man, they had to.
That's just Joe who likes to fillet the joystick.
Yeah, finish. And it's like, and the guy's like, there's a custodian. He's like, well, finish him.
If I have to. Yeah, so you did mention that Waterworld flopped. Would you call it a belly flop?
Oh, yes. Very nice.
Yes, very much a belly
flop. I'll see myself out, guys.
All right, everybody. All
right, see ya.
The Chris is gone. Joe's with us. We're talking Judge Dredd now. So
we're just on a dime. Just flip.
All right. Well, so I'm so excited. I'm getting flustered because I'm so excited to hear how you guys are going to tear into this, because we really only know the movie and how shitty the movie is. And we want to hear comparatively to the game.
Yeah.
But just sticking with the movie for right now, Chris, we'll start with you. When was the first time you ever saw the movie, were made aware of the movie, and what were your kind of first impressions as a fan of the series?
So I first saw it, or at least attempted to see it, over at my buddy's house. He had the VHS copy of it. I did not remember the Waterworld trailer
right
there. But I did see that it was circa 95-ish.
Gotcha.
And, you know, as most kids back in the day, you know, huge, huge fighting game person, love Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. love Street Fighter. I was like, wow, you know, I really want to watch this movie. It was Street Fighter, you know?
Yeah.
It had to be good, right?
Yeah.
Man, I can honestly say we got about 15 to 20 minutes into it, and I was like, you know what? This sucks. Let's just play the game instead.
Yeah.
So when you asked me, hey, would you come on the podcast and discuss Street Fighter the movie, I was like, yeah, sure. Shit, I have to watch this thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Childhood trauma revisited.
And as much as I love you guys, I hate you for making me watch this movie, but I'm glad I did.
Good.
Yeah, I'm glad I did.
Yeah, that's one of the struggles with this is the two of us.
You think I wanted to watch Bratz?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Twice? What, you did?
Yeah, the two of us are fine with torturing each other and torturing ourselves. I know we go on, and we know that it's a tough ask to ask our guests to put themselves through some bullshit just for this podcast. So understand that we sympathize, especially when it's movies that are not fun for the guests to watch. And thank you for your sacrifice.
I got halfway through it, and I just kind of looked over at my wife, and I was like, I thought Matt and Steven were my friends.
Yeah, so why are they doing this?
Here's
to
the
me?
Thing. The Lord,
why?
It's good radio.
The Lord does not give you challenges you can't handle. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were just conduits for the Lord on this one. We knew you could do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you did it.
So you mentioned the game, you know, that it was based off of Street Fighter 2 at the time. It was actually Super Street Fighter 2, the new characters, because it had, you know, Cammy and T-Hawk in there. Or what appeared to be Cammy and T-Hawk and a couple of the other characters. But that's actually the game that it was based on.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 3/4 of the way from the movie, and I was like, is that DJ?
Yeah,
I don't even forget his name.
It's DJ.
And then Bison called him that, and I was like, holy crap, what a shitty representation of a character.
Right,
from that game. You know, I had no idea.
And we'll get into it. I have some notes about the ethnic and cultural differences of the actors and the video game characters. So we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And we'll get more into the game as well.
And Joe has a very devilish look on his face as if that's something he was going to talk about too.
This impish grin. Yeah.
There's a lot of red flags that I'm tossing up here, and I'm sure that you'll discuss it, so I'm not going to ruin anything.
Yeah.
Just be prepared for some pretty animated expressions on my face.
I love it.
As you're narrating
this. While we're with you, though, Joe, same question that we asked Chris. What was the first time you saw it, and considering your history with the game, what was your reaction after the first time you saw it?
Okay, so just full disclosure, I am not a gamer.
Okay.
I really am not. If you're counting games like after 1996, I kind of explored music more than video games at that point in time. And that's
welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. This is a video game podcast. So
hello.
What are we doing?
So, like around the time that it came out, I actually enjoyed a good amount of video game experience on my Sega Genesis console. And we used to. My brother and I used to subscribe to a couple of gaming magazines.
Okay, yeah.
And that's actually the first point in time, and I'm thinking, which one was it? I think it was either Gaming Pro or...
I'm guessing Game Pro. My guess.
Okay, Game Pro. See, there's my memory fading a little bit.
That's all right.
But I remember the announcements that they were actually going to have a Street Fighter movie released, and it was going to star Wild Julia, and I'm like, wait a minute, so Gomez Adams is now going to just be
Bison
all of a sudden?
Yeah.
We go from actually a pretty solid movie to something that could be a complete grab bag of, it's either going to be okay or it's going to be probably the worst movie this side of some of the Pauly Shore movies during my childhood.
Oh yeah,
which you covered
dare.
One of them.
up to this point, video game movies was Super Mario Brothers and Double Dragon, so they didn't have the greatest track record.
Those are actually good ideas to cover too, by the way.
Yes.
No, but that was the first time that I heard of it. It was in Game Pro.
Mm-hmm.
They were discussing it, and then maybe about 3 or 4 months later, they had an obituary for Raul Julia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, he died?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, it was just all of a sudden. And this was before the internet. So that was like my only exposure to like celebrity news and celebrity deaths and everything like that. So rest in peace, Raul Julia.
Yeah.
For sure.
One of the only shining moments of this movie is his performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my opinion.
Really?
You know what? There's not a lot in this movie, so let's just – if we're going to – we'll save it to the end for the positive stuff, but it was – he had the gravitas of a dictator.
Okay.
And that's what we'll say about that.
Yeah, he did.
I like the differing opinions. We don't – it's
Oh, it's coming, buddy.
Ah, I love it. So the advertisement piqued your interest enough to see the movie, Joe?
No. Oh, actually, okay. That's kind of the funny thing about it is I never saw it in theaters. Oh. I do remember seeing bits and pieces when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be shown either on cable or on Channel 11 or Channel 30, late at night, like competing with SNL or something like that. But I never really took full interest into the movie until you actually gave me the arduous task of researching this movie for this podcast. So this was a bit of a curveball.
Friends ask friends to do hard things for them. So this...
And I mean, I am a power center. Sure. That's the way that I look at it. I mean, I've listened, except for the last episode, I've listened to all your podcasts. So I'm like,
thank you.
Well, need to at least try to do this a little bit of justice. So
yes. So we appreciate the listening.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I at least tried to watch it back in the day. I just couldn't.
That's true. Yeah.
So
you're like, alternatively, just play the game because it's right here.
Well, I just want to say you both are troopers. You both are troopers for your efforts, and we thank you for the sacrifices you're willing to make for this little show.
Anything for you two.
Oh, thanks, man.
Thank you.
And we did your show, so you owe us.
Yes.
Trust me, I did this show, you owe me again.
It's true. We owe each other so much.
After this show, we may have to owe them financially next time.
Financial compensation.
For us personally, kind of the same thing as Joe, we were well aware of the movie, of course. Huge Mortal Kombat fans. Only really saw the Street Fighter games. In the arcades, anytime we were fortunate enough to find ourselves in like a Tilt or in like a movie theater. And of course, really wanted, I think like Street Fighter 4 had come out on PlayStation and we really wanted that just because we were big on fighting games.
Yeah.
But Mortal Kombat, out of the video game properties, Mortal Kombat was the one we were most titillated by, tantalized by, because of how
seduced
because of how like naughty it was,
just the imagery,
and then plus the movie we watched countless times throughout our life. So Street Fighter the movie was something we were well aware of because like you said, Joe, they would show it on TV and we kind of catch bits and pieces. I personally didn't watch the movie until maybe like 2013 or 14 on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time being like, you know, this isn't as bad. It's bad. Don't get me wrong. It's not as bad as people say. And then I went back and watched it for the show. And I'm like, I was wrong. You know,
I was wrong.
You know, I was 22 at the time. I'm 30 now. You know, times change.
Yeah.
And I definitely grew out of that mindset of it's actually pretty good. For me personally, it's not mind-numbingly terrible, but it still was very, very bad.
It's not Crow Wicked Prayer.
Yeah,
but it's certainly not Spice World, you know?
Yeah.
My tastes have refined.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing with you guys. Even when you were doing Radcast and stuff like that, no matter what you did, there was always a positive spin on it.
Sure, yeah.
So you could watch the most dog shit movie possible this case you probably did and you were still able to find good things about it. It wasn't that bad. Me personally, the Super Mario Brothers movie, I know it's a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, kind of like it.
Sure.
It's like a guilty pleasure thing.
But
that's one of the things about you guys is you always find something positive to say about anything. You know, well,
why not?
That's a piece of shit, but the corn inside it was fantastic.
Even if it's not the subject itself, maybe the time surrounding the subject. It's like reminds us of the more innocent times. Like maybe, the movie Street Fighter sucked for you, but it reminds you of hanging out with your friend and playing the video game. So if anything, There's always something. Why waste time and be negative about everything? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for
Steven. You mentioned that you watched this when back in 2013, and you know you were 20 something and mm-hmm. just a young pup.
Yeah.
At that time, I was rocking two kids. So
yeah,
that's fair.
Okay. Yeah. Different opinions, different stages of life.
My only two kids were my balls.
nice.
But
my three kids came from my balls.
Yeah, that's fair. They gotta start somewhere. Thanks for saying that though, Chris. And then yeah. thanks Joe for every week just being yeah. a tried and true center. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, Joe's always texting me yeah. saying, you know, giving some positive feedback mm-hmm. on the episode, so appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you both. You guys are both great at encouraging us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also the feeling's very mutual. I mean, I enjoy the entertainment that I have heard on your podcast so many times, whether I'm driving in the car or especially lately going on this bit of that exercise kit.
Yeah.
And listening to the podcast while I'm actually going on my walks and logging activity every day.
Yeah.
So I guess I could actually say I kind of contribute some of my weight loss to Sucktastic Cinema.
Hey,
so,
hear that? Right. With a sinner success story.
Yes.
Down 25 pounds.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. That's awesome. That's like, but both you guys, like, thank you so much for saying
sure.
the stuff you did. Sometimes, and if you, then Joe, I know you probably heard on Biodome when our buddy Dan Drake was kind of saying some great things that we greatly appreciated, but we kind of like were slinking back a little bit because we were like, we don't want it to make it seem like we have people on the show who we know will give us praise.
No. We did not ask you guys to do this,
yes.
listeners. We didn't prep them and say nice things about us.
Yes, this is, they are both kind fellows.
Yes.
So
I
should I return the bag of money?
Compensation.
No, don't return the bag of money. I've already spent it.
Yeah, it's on therapy for watching Street Fighter. Let's get into it.
Yeah, so the movie, for those of you that have been listening when we have guests, it's a little more loose than our kind of structured, you know, going through the synopsis. But the movie itself, I thought it was funny that it started up on the Universal logo
mm-hmm.
and then it turns into like the Bison logo or like the Street Fighter logo.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love Batman Forever too much to say it stole anything from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
But that's very reminiscent of the Warner Brothers logo turning into the
yeah.
Bat for Batman Forever.
This is true.
But parallel thinking. I'll just say yes. parallel thinking. But it's pretty much what it is M. Bison from the game is mm-hmm. this evil dictator who is the leader of this crime syndicate,
yeah.
Who he is ruling over this poor kind of third world country of Shadaloo, which sounds like that an Adam Sandler noise.
Is it Shadaloo?
And he's taken hostage.
Joey Jojo Jr.
Joey
Shabadoo.
Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
That's the dumbest name I've ever heard.
Hey, Joey Jojo.
Oh, Jojo. But essentially,
nice pull.
Yeah, good
Simpsons
pull.
Simpsons reference.
But Guile, who is Jean-Claude Van Damme, who isn't, from my reading, isn't the main character in the games.
No.
That's actually Ken and Ryu, who kind of play
that's
a backseat.
That's what I always thought, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought they were like the poster guys of
yeah.
Street Fighter. He is the leader of this kind of this military group that's like it's kind of like the United Nations, but
yeah.
it's not. And he's supposed to, and he wants to take down Bison because Bison's taking a bunch
mm-hmm.
of people who are helping out with the
yeah.
kind of relief workers.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are helping out with like this effort in Shabadoo.
They've taken Guile's men.
Yeah.
Some of them.
They've taken some of them, but also they've taken Guile, or not Guile, but yeah, yeah. I'm getting Bison and Guile mixed
yes.
up. Bison has taken some of Guile's men and some of the relief workers in
yes.
Shabadoo. Shadaloo.
It's Shabadoo.
In this country of Shadaloo, these relief workers are trying to help the sick and trying to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And Bison is taking them hostage. And essentially, it starts as one big effort.
It's a rescue mission.
Guile's conducting a rescue
yeah.
mission. And there's this animosity between Guile and Bison. And then we'll later see... I'm going to back up a little bit and say that there is a... abundance of characters. Some would say an overabundance
mm-hmm.
of characters in this movie. Not just in the movie, but in like the first 15 minutes, they established like 15 characters we're supposed
yeah.
to follow.
Yeah. I kind of want to let the dogs loose on this because we encounter Ken and Ryu, they're arms dealers, and that's where we get Sagat with and Vega, and like you're introduced E Honda and Balrog and Chun Li work together, and Cammy and T-Hawk, they work with Guile. So those are all the characters. Dulcim is
a scientist
who is trying to create a super soldier, Enter Blanca.
He's being forced by Bison to create the super soldier who that's what Blanca becomes.
Yeah. And so there are the characters, listeners. Yeah.
Again, it's in the first 20 minutes
that
we have to follow this. And don't worry, they try to make them look as game accurate as they can. However, if you miss that, some other character within the first 10 seconds they're on screen is going to say, "You seen this Balrog? I sure am, Honda.
Yeah,
what about
exactly.
you, Chun-Li? I'm trying to talk to Guile." And like,
it was the same problem in Mortal Kombat Annihilation is all that fan service.
Yeah.
And so like, even if they squeezed a character in just by mentioning them, like, that's them. And it doesn't contribute to the plot. So anyway, there are the characters.
Yes.
I'm turning it over to the guests, and we're going to let the dogs loose, so to speak. So whoever wants to start, you guys have a lot of shit to talk.
Let's get Chris's opinion
on
that
Chris,
one.
You're ready to, bust.
Okay, you had mentioned that they kind of spewed all the characters out in the first several minutes of the movie.
Please.
And you mentioned the fan service. The one that struck me the heart, I don't even want to say that it struck me the hardest, but the admission of, or the addition of Dalton as a nerdy scientist who doesn't do anything remotely what he does in the game, you could have just named him, like, you know, George.
Yeah.
You didn't have to give him that. You know, in the game, he's an Indian fighter who stretches and blows fire.
Yeah.
And he's fighting in an arena full of elephants. No, he's now creating a soldier in Blanca. And just, that was very painful to watch because he was one of my favorite characters playing in the game. So I'm like, oh, my God, they did you wrong. Yeah. Sir.
Especially at the end. We'll see at the end. He looks terrible without a shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Just completely messed it up.
Yeah.
You know, the character design in the movie of Vega, I think they actually did a good job with the hairline on Balrog. Good God.
What are you doing? That's
like LeBron James level hairline. It's just so messed up.
Yeah. Is this a Judge Dredd situation to where, like, in the comics he doesn't ever take his helmet off? Does Vega? No, what I'm saying like in Judge Dredd, like in the Sylvester Stallone movie, he spends most of the movie without his helmet.
No, yeah, I'm saying, and you're in reference to Vega, because I just wanted to make sure, because Chris just got done talking about Balrog.
Anyway, correct. Forget I said anything about Judge Dredd. In the game, does Vega ever take his mask off?
I think in after he wins, he takes his mask off. I do know that if you beat the crap out of him enough, he does lose his claw.
Okay, yeah.
But as far as just like taking his mask off, I think he does. That's a minor point.
Sure.
I think out of all the characters that they could have done, honestly, I think Vega did the best, and he was a side throwaway character in the movie. So, the character who played Bison, M. Bison, if you will, I thought I recognized him, and I didn't put two and two together of who he actually was. Yeah. But in my notes, I literally put him down as a D-list movie star, Antonio Banderas.
Oh no, Raul Julia's a legend.
At least,
I know. I get that.
Oh,
but
okay.
I did not put those two together.
Gotcha.
I did not put Raul Julia in that role.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So in my eyes, I was just like, "Holy crap! They got this really bad Antonio Banderas look-alike."
Right. Yeah.
And then to come to find out, it was Gomez Adams, and I'm like, "Oh shit!" And then I look at his IMDb, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's him." You know, I wonder
if
two of the last three things on his IMDb were Street Fighter the movie and Street Fighter the movie, the video game. Right. I wonder if that's what gave him a stroke and he died.
Right.
Yeah, well,
there's a story behind why he did this movie, and it's actually pretty wholesome. But we'll get to that once you guys are done dishing out your vitriol.
Yes.
What else you got, Chris?
I got the fact that Jean-Claude Van Damme, or I'm sorry, Guile, mm-hmm. the character played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, is full-hearted American in the Army, uh-huh. which they did that right.
Yeah.
He should not have had Jean-Claude Van Damme's, what is it, a French accent?
Yeah, he's Belgian, so yeah, he's got a French accent. Yeah.
His very strong accent does not fit the character whatsoever.
But what about during rousing speeches? Doesn't he get his point across with that accent?
Sure. No, we'll go with that.
Why not?
No, don't entertain him. The answer is no.
Yes.
No, I was not aroused. I'll tell you that much.
That's very good.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some notes about like special effects and stuff like that, but honestly, the character development, the character plot lines, they stray so much from not that the fighting game has a lot of story to begin with. Mm-hmm.
But there was also no fighting in this movie, so
no, there really wasn't for a fighting game.
There was no fighting. Right. Yeah.
Right. The character, I guess what I'm looking for is that they really turned into the whole stereotypical, I don't even know the words that I'm looking for. I know I said it earlier.
Yeah.
But it's,
there's racial stereotypes.
Stereotypical ethnic. Thank you. Yeah. That's it right there. They really turned into that.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty hard. I think that's what Joe's going to talk about. So I'll let him
pass it over to Joe.
Okay, so before I get into the vitriol of everything,
yes,
I will say one thing positive.
Okay.
And that one big thing is, well, I have to preface this by the fact that I kind of always had a crush on Kylie Minogue.
Of course.
I'll just say that right now.
Of course. She's incredibly nice to look at.
To that.
She is an ageless wonder. Mm-hmm. She looks in this movie like she does today.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what she has conjured up.
Koala meat.
From 1994 to present day. Something. Yeah. But I'm like, if I was just looking at this movie alone based on Kylie Minogue herself, I would have thought that it was filmed like about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You guys aren't going to see the video, but Chris is being a little saucy.
Yeah, he is.
Joe's watching the movie.
I saw
alone.
The gesture.
Yes.
I know you did.
Something about joysticks, Joe, like we were talking about earlier.
Right. You want to know her secret, Joe? It's a lot of money and really good doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably it too.
Yeah.
So I digress. So I'm gonna rip into this.
All right. Yes.
Okay. So first of all, Blanca.
Yes.
Is like the biggest, baddest, meanest character in Street Fighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was always the toughest one for me to beat.
Yeah.
I got so frustrated by him, but the portrayal of Blanca makes it look like he's a poor man's Lou Ferrigno Hulk.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I had a note that said he looks like Lou Ferrigno's Hulk with like an orange wig or like a Goosebumps character.
It is so poorly executed.
It's terrible.
I'm like, what the fuck were they actually thinking when they made this character?
Well, all the money went to Jean-Claude Van Damme and Raul Julia. So
No kidding.
Yeah.
It bothers me. Blanca is an intimidating character.
Yeah.
And
it was like Lou Ferrigno's bad stunt double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And Dahl and
so that's
I was gonna say, and Dhalsim and Blanca are like the same height in this movie. And Dhalsim's just this dumpy scientist.
Again, Blanca is like the biggest, baddest character in the game.
Yep.
And it's laughable.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, he looks terrible.
I facepalmed, especially towards the end of the movie, of how he's actually coming out of the growth chamber and everything like that after all the memories are conditioned in him. And I'm like,
it's funny.
No.
It's funny that you say, because I'm sure you're not alone in that. that he's this feral character from my understanding of him, that he is this big, bad, tough opponent, and he's the one they're using to try and show this monster that's trying to be indoctrinated by this evil dictator. They're using him as the totem to show, you know, no matter how much evil you put in someone, yeah, you always need that one person to put good into them. And it's funny that they took such a ferocious character in the game and they chose him as the character to try to infuse morality.
Basically
into.
Chunk from the Goonies.
Yeah.
Sort of like a teaching him to be good sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dalsum is Chunk.
Not
to,
Chunk.
Sloth.
Yeah. It's basically Sloth from the
Dalsum
Goonies.
Dalsum is Chunk and Blanca
and
is Sloth.
Sloth from the Goonies.
And speaking of Dalsum, I kind of have a little bit of umbrage with how he's portrayed a little bit, because I hate to say this, it almost seems like they kind of put him in blackface a little bit, which really got to me. And the last 25 minutes of the movie really got to me, where I really want to riff on it, but I digress. This is probably the biggest disappointment of it all, because I know the game from when I was a kid. The two main characters of Street Fighter are Ken and Ryu.
Exactly.
And for Ryu, it's a massive disappointment, because you don't get exposure to the signature thing about Street Fighter. Hadouken.
Exactly. Yeah. You get a very brief blink and you miss it sort of thing.
It's a very, right. You are missing out on one of the signature phrases of late 80s, early 90s video.
Oh, yeah. Well, in E Honda.
You had your chance and you blew it.
Exactly. And E Honda technically did the 100 hand slap, but it was so like zoomed in and close up, you couldn't tell that that's what it was.
Yeah. They blew their chances multiple times with these characters in what they are actually infamous for.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Guile is a good one.
Yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme did not wear that signature blonde hairstyle.
Yeah, we're texting back and forth.
He looks like John.
No, go ahead.
He looks like John Cena, actually.
Well, at least John Cena would commit to the role and wear like a tall yellow wig.
Maybe they can do that in a reboot or something like that. Just load it up with a bunch of WWF characters.
Yeah, exactly.
And, excuse me, WWE. I don't want to get sued there.
Yes, please. It's been 20 years since they changed their name.
Get on the program, bro.
Yeah, come on, man.
put a blonde wig on John Cena. I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking, Jean-Claude Van Damme looks like it's John Cena in army fatigues. Yeah. And it's being portrayed as Guile.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like
it just doesn't.
Which you already can't see him. So with the army fatigues, it's like it's just doubling down on it. Exactly.
I feel like Guile. They really wanted to put all their eggs in the Jean-Claude Van Damme basket, and that's not a euphemism for anything.
No.
they wanted to put everything into getting Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Steven D'Souza, the director, was actually very familiar with Street Fighter, and he wrote a treatment that would actually got an R rating, but the MPAA sent it back to him and told him to edit out a lot of the violence, because it was much more violent, apparently.
Yeah.
And then it came back, and stuff he edited, it came back from the MPAA as a G rating. So
back to the drawing board.
I don't know how far he went out to get a G rating from R, but it was very far out.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, it was a very different movie. It was very scaled down with characters. And I'm curious if, since he was familiar, if it was more centered around Ken and Ryu, and then they get Jean-Claude Van Damme, and now it's like, okay, well, we're not going to make him Ken. Guile. Let's throw Guile at him and then center the story around Guile, and Guile's soldiers are the ones who have this big rescue mission, and then every other person, everybody else, you know, the Chun-Li's, the Balrogs, Honda.
Let's just all put them in their own separate cliques.
Yeah, exactly. And then they all kind of come together. But the issue is, you get a bunch of muddled, unresolved stories, or you get a bunch of like plot lines that go in different directions and then somehow they all converge, and it's just it's all a mess because Capcom wanted so many characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Capcom and their characters, did you notice during the magic scene mm-hmm. with Chun-Li doing her thing?
Yeah.
They picked up a barrel, yes. and on top of the barrel, there was a Capcom logo
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, yep. Yep. That was a cool little
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Oh, that's a nice little
plug. And then
plug,
when, yeah.
yeah,
yeah, I liked it. And then when Bison was doing whatever he was with the controls,
yeah.
it looked like
their Street Fighter.
It looked like a Street Fighter arcade cabinet.
Yeah, yeah. Those are nice little touches. Like, see, we know what this is, sort of thing. Very like self awareness, sort of thing.
Yeah. How did you guys feel? Go ahead.
I was going to say the Easter eggs are actually probably some of the endearing things about this movie.
Yeah. And there's like brief comedic interactions, like DJ and Bison have a couple funny interactions.
So I was going to ask you guys, so Mortal Kombat came out after Street Fighter II. It's actually Street Fighter II caused a renaissance in arcade gaming, and it actually helped kind of create the interest from who did Mortal Kombat? Was that Midway?
Yeah, Midway.
So it created interest for Midway to make a game close to Street Fighter, and obviously Mortal Kombat is much darker in tone.
Yeah.
And I always thought Street Fighter was a little more colorful, is a little
it's
lighter
more
in
arcade-y.
Tone. Yeah. So that being said, did you guys like how comedic they tried to make it, or was that something you think they shouldn't have been as tongue in cheek about?
Because of the entire, if I put the entire movie together, mm-hmm. and then they start sprinkling in the jokes when they did, I thought they were funny, but it didn't fit the overall mood of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm kind of glad that they put them in, yes, but it just doesn't fit the vibe.
Right.
And I get what you're saying about the lighter, more colorful mm-hmm. version of the game versus the movie or of Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. but I just didn't feel that it fit in this movie.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I'm a huge fan of dad jokes, so the jokes that were in it
mm-hmm.
were kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Sure. I'll be honest.
Of course. For sure. Yeah, and I know Steven D'Souza, when he wrote it, he wanted to infuse that humor in there. And up to this point, the video games that they made movies, so Super Mario Brothers and Double Dragons, aesthetically were definitely lighter. So I think every video game mm-hmm. effort until Mortal Kombat the next year was kind of this, you know, there's a lot more levity. There's a lot more silliness.
Yeah.
The big villain was kind of cartoonishly like he was kind of like a goof, like almost seen as like an imbecile. And I think, again, not being super familiar with the games themselves, but if a character like M. Bison, who's supposed to be this tyrant who has all these villagers under his thumb, who's this big crime lord that people cower in front of, I don't really like how like someone like DJ is behind him kind of like rolling his eyes thinking like he's an idiot.
Like he doesn't even take him seriously.
There's no reverence. And the only reason like Zangief,
right.
like the only reason Zangief is so loyal to him is Zangief is played off as an idiot in this movie. So it just seems like you only follow M. Bison and take him seriously it seems like M. Bison's the only one who takes himself seriously unless you're a dummy like Zangief. And I'm like again, until Mortal Kombat, when they did Shang Tsung, there really wasn't a lot of menace to these villains. And I was like, you know, you could have done that, which hence I think why Raul Julia, probably played it more over the top,
very
grandiose.
Theatrical. I mentioned gravitas earlier. Mm-hmm. Definitely more to his strengths as a theater actor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as someone is trying to create a empire known as Bisonopolis,
mm-hmm. yeah. like, all right,
after that, you kind of lose your credibility on that.
Once he made a food court joke, I was like, all right, I'm not scared of this guy. This guy does not intimidate me. I could probably beat up this M. Bison.
Right. Now, if they would have done the jokes more throughout the movie,
yeah,
I think it would have been better.
Sure.
But I don't think there was enough of the lighthearted moments, because even IMDb has it as like action, something else, and comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not a flipping comedy.
Yeah.
You know, if they would have done that more, I can get on board with it. Hell, I might have even liked it more than I did.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or didn't, I should say.
Right.
But yeah, sorry. Came to my mind.
No, you're fine. Like, cause it is something to where I feel like they had a lane, you know, anybody, cause a lot of people who are making these movies weren't familiar with the games. They just knew video games. So I feel like they tried to stay in a lane instead of like trying to bring any sort of like maliciousness,
mm-hmm.
like real, like gravity, like
yeah.
real maliciousness to the situations in the movie. You mentioned along with the humor, and this kind of goes hand in hand. This goes without saying, the acting is horrible
yeah.
in this movie.
Like I made sure to make a note that like Jean-Claude Van Damme is bad in this movie, but it's not like normal Jean-Claude Van Damme bad acting that you kind of expect from him, to where you're like, oh, but I'm along for this ride. He just seems like really distracted. And he phones it in a lot of parts.
Yeah.
And it's probably because
yeah.
he had a cocaine addiction at
mm-hmm.
at this time. And he was like a major onset headache. So you can tell in certain parts where like he's probably on coke, which
mm-hmm.
is kind of sucks, because now he looks back and regrets it. But this isn't like typical Jean-Claude bad acting. Like, this is totally phoned in and distracted
mm-hmm.
sort of acting.
Yeah.
That movie made me want to do cocaine.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. All right. Well,
that's not on my head. So I didn't
right.
tell you to do that. Yeah.
But also, there's like.
Go ahead. I was going to say, if I ever have get a cocaine addiction, I'm blaming you.
Yeah.
Get in line.
You're talking to your therapist and you're like, these idiots made me watch the movie Street Fighter, and now I'm addicted to cocaine.
But also, along with bad act, just wooden, very stilted line delivery from someone like Ming-Na Wen, who's a good actress.
Yeah.
So I was very surprised by that. But then it's like the ADR, which, as you guys have heard, some of the issues we run into with these movies, the ADR, so the post-production kind of dubbing,
dialogue recording,
is very, very bad. Like, worse than a lot, because there's two like super like apparent in your face moments where the ADR is super bad. There's one with Sagat when he first corners Ken and Ryu, and he thinks he has them tricked, and he has this firing squad in front of him
mm-hmm.
who end up firing guns that fire tennis balls.
Failed
attempt
arms to, deal, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not going to go into it.
Yeah. But Sagat, he says something to where the Wes Studi, who plays Sagat, is saying something that's totally different than what the line is, so his mouth doesn't match up. And then it's the same thing you guys mentioned Chris, you mentioned, and there's this point where all this stuff happens. Ken and Ryu have to pretend to be on Sagat and Bison's side in order to help Guile get to Bison and all this stuff. So they're in this like circus tent, this like sin den with a bunch
yeah.
of like crime lords, and that's where Chun-Li and
E-Honda
and Balrog are pretending to be this magic troop and doing this magic trip for them in disguise. And there's this part where the good guys, Ken and Ryu, end up in another tent. Again, this is all over the place, and my head is spinning.
Yeah.
But essentially, there's this part where Ken and Ryu have to, quote-unquote, sell out, or they sell out, like,
Chun-Li.
And her cohorts. And there's this big crate on the side of the tent. Essentially, they open up the crate, and Chun-Li is giving this big soliloquy, and her voice Ming-Na Wen's
yeah.
mouth movements don't match
up. It's a recording of her threatening M. Bison, but instead of just showing a video, why didn't you just, while they were all in there, just without announcing yourself, just kill everyone in there? Like, just run your truck through the tent, and that way you kill everyone. Now you gave them enough time with this video to evacuate.
So it's just that kind of stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Zangief wanted to change the channel.
Exactly. Change the channel! Yeah, that was the only part that was like kind of funny.
So you mentioned Vega was one of the bright spots as far as casting and the way that the character looked against the game. I think Zangief is also another one. I think Zangief was pretty close to how he was in the game.
Yeah, they did a good job with him as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned the acting not being up to par, and then you started talking about the audio and stuff. As someone who has done video editing in the past and things like that, I can tell the camera work needed a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
The audio was absolutely atrocious. The music selection for it wasn't very good. Just the take away the story, take away the acting and everything else like that. If you and you know my podcasts can or our podcast, I should say, can attest to this. You can have shit content. Mm-hmm. But if it sounds good and it looks good, it's not so bad.
So, you're putting down your own podcast? You guys have shit content?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a fan. I don't even follow myself on social media.
Yeah.
But no, if you take a bad product and wrap it up in something better, then it doesn't, the inside product doesn't seem quite so bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But just everything was.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least, even if you don't like Zack Snyder's writing, at least his movies look good, sort of thing.
Right.
You know, whereas this just doesn't, the presentation's bad.
I think the biggest thing for me has to go back to something that you say, and it's kind of a disappointment because I'm not trying to rip on the guy that died several months after this movie was made. It's Raul Julia, and it kind of, this is what it reminds me of. It reminds me of General Zod in Superman 2.
Ah, okay. Yep.
It seems so forced, so over the top, because he was trying so hard to achieve this level of gravitas that would intimidate everybody, but it just does not register.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I will say that if it's probably anybody in this movie that's done a good job with the acting, I probably would have to give credit to Ming-Na.
Yeah, yeah.
She actually does an okay job at portraying Chun-Li.
She's a competent actress.
Nothing seems like it's phoned in or too forced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of seems like, and if you were judging it on a different performance of hers specifically, it would probably be average, right?
Sure.
I mean, she did a way better job doing Mulan
in the
live action.
Yeah. Yeah. She's recently been in, like, The Mandalorian and stuff, so she nailed it there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But this would kind of be considered average, all things considered.
Yeah.
Everybody else, except for those two, because those are the two notables that I had in my on file, everybody else is forgettable.
And it's
Jean-Claude Van Damme, I mean, that goes without saying, right? I was expecting bad acting out of him, but you're right, it's kind of phoned in.
Yeah.
Kylie Minogue is a little forgettable.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like there's so many, and this goes with also what they tried to put in from the game, at least from what I could tell from the game. A lot of stuff is shoehorned in, almost like they had a couple, like, it's almost when you have a sheet of paper of, like, boxes you have to check, and then you're like, all right, all done, and you flip it over, and there's two more boxes before you turn. It's like, oh, shit!
Yep.
Yeah.
So then they have to, okay, we have to do that and that. How much time we have left? Oh, 10 minutes. Okay, what's our budget? Ooh, okay. So that's why it also sounds like, they finished the ADR on some characters, like in post-production, but then they forgot other characters because there's so many. So some characters are delivering lines to where, like, they may have had some sort of enthusiasm during the whole movie. Like, someone like Balrog, who he's putting in a little effort, but then in one part he's like, tell us where the hostages are.
Yeah.
And it sounds like someone else
voicing his character like in post-production, to where it's like, we need this real quick. We don't care the quality. Just say the line. We have to cut this and edit it.
Well, and Ryu as well is like really like kind of lighthearted and playful the whole time. But then towards the end, he starts taking himself too seriously.
We get whenever
and
we
then
sometimes...
he like he lowers his voice like this. He's like, I'm going to go help out.
You That's know? The thing. Whenever they're trying to deliver some sort of punch, not you know pun. Not intended, I guess, but whenever they're trying to deliver some sort of like some emphasis on like a one-liner or something, they when they get that tight shot, it seems like, again, with the ADR, it seems like he's like this, and then like this when like a tight shot on, it's just it looks really really bad because every movie's ADR'd, and so many movies don't have an issue with making it look natural, but this movie just had the issue of it just looked so it's so put on.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to completely interrupt and say something almost off topic. But the whole Ken and Ryu thing, I wish they would have found someone else to play Ken.
Yeah.
You found like the most nerdiest, you know, white guy possible. And you're like, oh, give that guy, you know, Ken, someone who is, you know, one of the most notable fighters in Street Fighter history.
Right, exactly.
You know, let's give him to some random white dude.
Well, and it goes with the it goes with how we kind of mentioned how they culturally and ethnically miss the mark on a lot of characters. And I think besides Guile, Ken was the biggest one because in the game, Ken is Japanese American. In the movie, he's American, and the actor Damian Chapa is Mexican American. So you've got this whole stew of things. Like, how do you get this for this character?
And also with Ken, I would say for me at least, for it's because he's the worst because he's somebody who has, because you have people who are bad but don't have a lot of lines.
Yeah.
I think Ken is supposed to be one of the focal points and he's given a lot of lines. So because he does so little with the lines he does, like I made a few notes on that. Like he's really bad. He's supposed to be comic relief, but his one-liners are terrible. So there's this part, there's the part that we've mentioned before at the circus. And when Balrog and Honda kind of, they almost drag Ken and Ryu into the tent they're in with Chun-Li to kind of let them know, hey, we're the good guys. We know that you are guys are good too, but do you want to, like, kind of giving them, laying the land out, like we're friends of Guile and blah, we're with Guile or so, I don't know. But no, she's like, we know you work for Guile, we're the good guys too, whatever, blah blah blah. And it's this part where it's established what Chun-Li hates. Like, she wants revenge on Bison because Bison killed her father. But then we have these small little moments to where we see Balrog and E-Honda's connections to Bison. E-Honda says, like, he was going to be Yokozuna because he's a sumo champion.
Yeah.
He's going to be Yokozuna, but then his reputation was tarnished. And Shadabadu or Shadaloo.
Yeah, after Hogan beat him at WrestleMania 9.
Exactly. Yeah.
best WrestleMania
ever.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Caesar's Palace, baby.
That is the Street Fighter of WrestleManias.
Yeah.
But
there you go. Tie it in.
But Balrog comes in saying he was a boxing champion because Ryu's like, and you're Balrog. You're boxing champion. Or Ken said that. And he's like, you know, and until like they ruined my reputation too. And then Ken randomly goes, let me guess, figure skating. And I was like, that is such a misplaced line. It doesn't flow with anything they just said. No. You're not referencing, you're not making a joke or being sarcastic about something it would be better if he said, let me guess, big boy, you were a figure skater. That would work in there. It's still not
funny.
He
already told you he was a boxer.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, ruined my boxing career.
Yeah.
I think he was looking at Chun-Li when he said it, though.
Oh, no, he was. Because he looked at Chun-Li, he's like, let me guess, figure skating.
That makes
sense. And then she grabbed his throat.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That makes more sense.
Right. It still wasn't well delivered. And there was another moment to where Ken and Ryu are able to escape, you know, being thought of in cahoots with the good guys, so they end up back at Bison's palace where every story converges eventually, and when Chun-Li, E-Honda, and Balrog are being ushered away to be put in their own prison cells. Ken and Ryu are told to be, like, Zangief is told to take Ken and Ryu up to go get their what would become their video game uniforms.
Yeah.
And Ken's like, they're taking him away. Those are the good guys. And we're the good guys too. And I'm like, oh my God. Like,
just look at the camera and say, right, guys?
Yeah.
And may as well just break the fourth wall.
But then there's another part where Sagat is like, are you with us or against us? And Ken's like, is that multiple choice? And I'm like,
yeah.
These are stupid. Yeah, yes, he gave you two choices. Of course it's multiple choice. It'd be fun if he's like, are there any other options?
Yeah.
Like, that's what would have made that better.
Yeah.
Here's Sagat's one that I had. Here's one that I had. So I think we're all kind of forgetting about DJ and how awful that character was.
So Jamaican. He's Jamaican me crazy.
Well, okay, first of all, there's that. That is like one of the blatant racist overtones, you know. It seems to me that all they could think about with a Jamaican character was to give him the stereotypical Jamaican accent, kind of make him Rasta, and throw in a little bit of Billy Blanks.
He does look like Billy Blanks. Apparently,
well, that was kind of how his character was based on in the first place. But the line at the end of the movie where he's saying something of the nature of going back to the motherland, and he's taken off the treasure chest, and then it just explodes and everywhere, and then it's bison bugs.
Yeah.
I feel like that line right there, if they were trying to go for comedic effect, how in the world did they try to arrive at the punchline there? He may
as well have said
very contrived.
He may as well have said the only joke I work for is joke chicken man. You know, he may as well have said that. So.
Don't trash the bison bucks. They're worth €5.
That's true. But we're Americans.
Did Street Fighter do a promotion with Taco Bell?
Because
you could say
because Border Bucks.
I guess you could replace Border Bucks with bison bucks just for like a few months.
Maybe.
Right. That movie
it's
was
as good
everywhere.
As money.
Yeah.
I think that's why it did so well in the box office, because the internet wasn't around to just.
Oh yeah!
Shit, talk this movie to oblivion.
No one read the newspaper. Kids didn't read the newspaper, so they weren't reading reviews.
No,
yeah,
no. But the movie was everywhere. Like, it was promoted.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest game consoles of all time released the movie, the game for it. Like, it was everywhere, and everyone was like, "Oh, hey, we're gonna go see Street Fighter. The games are so good. The movie's got to be good."
Right.
And then there's no refunds.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought the movie was so, just because there's so many characters, there's so many subplots we're having to deal with. When you eventually get to Guile's rally the troops speech, when they're gonna go storm Shabadoo and go save the hostages, like it's obviously the famous rally the troops speech, and it's so Jean-Claude Van Damme's. I'm going to kick Bison's ass so hard that the next bison wannabe is going to feel it. And they're like, yeah. But at this point in the movie, I'm like, I don't care enough about Guile to, like, really get behind any of this. And the theme, last week, all this stuff was unearned that we were supposed to feel about the main character. It's unearned at this point. We still have, like, 40 minutes of movie left. Like, we're not getting – it's not like the final confrontations where it's like – it's not like Aragorn when they're about to, you know, in Return of the King. Like, this, we haven't even gotten to where we're fighting yet, and so it feels like it's very soon. It's very, very soon.
Yeah, and one thing I'm sure you guys picked up on this, because this was one of the more overtly questionable lines in the movie. So Balrog and E-Honda are in their own prison cell, and E-Honda is getting whipped.
Which is actually kind of funny.
Yeah,
he's not responding to it at all.
Because he tells Balrog that, like, you know, he's like, I'm sumo, brother. Like,
separate the mind from the body.
Separate the mind from the body. And each time he gets whipped, there's this Hawaiian musical sting that plays.
Yeah.
But after the guy who's whipping Ihondu, punches Balrog in the face because Balrog was mouthing off to him. So he leaves, I guess, to go get like a cat of nine tails or something. I don't know. Something that'll be a little more effective.
Yeah.
Balrog's pulling on his chains, and he's like, Ihondu, give me a hand. And he's like, we've only been here 2 hours, brother. Give it maybe next month.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy.
It's a hand job joke.
Holy yeah. shit.
Yeah.
Ihondu sounds like he'll be okay with it, too. Yeah.
He's like,
separate the mind from the body.
That's where the PG-13 came from.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But it's funny because later on when Guile, Cammy, and T-Hawk, they're in their stealth mode and they're approaching, which I don't know how stealthy you can be when your name is on your cruise boat.
Yeah.
But they're in kind of their cruise boat after Guile randomly watches a home movie of him
harassing a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
She's visibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, we won't give any context to why he's watching it. We'll just say a video of him harassing a woman.
Pretty sure it was real on set footage of Jean-Claude Van Damme harassing an unsuspecting woman.
Yeah,
just by the look on her face.
Can we go into the line that's cringeworthy
yes.
for me?
Yes.
Okay. Speaking of Jean-Claude Van Damme, and
while we're on the
Guile,
subject, yes.
What about the end of the movie? One of the last lines.
He's a charmer.
That is.
He's
uttered.
A charmer, man.
He is such
what
a charmer.
What was the line?
You know. So, Chun-Li approaches him about doing that exclusive interview.
Yeah.
And then, in I'm only thinking probably typical JVD form, looks her up and down, pauses, and then says, only if you're wearing that dress.
Oh, man. And then she looks like she's okay with it.
Yeah.
Cue sexual harassment panda.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a quid pro quo sexual harassment
exactly.
violation that would probably not be acceptable in today's society.
Hello, everyone. For the remainder of the show, the audio is going to be a little different, so there's no need to adjust the player on the device you're listening to this episode on, because there's nothing wrong with it. Unless there is something wrong with it, and if that's the case, that's not our fault. Anyway, please enjoy the rest of Street Fighter.
Your ass is mine. And I was like, okay, well, I'm sure Honda is, since Honda's in the mood, I'm sure he's already taken Bison's ass. So,
yeah.
So, you know.
And doesn't Bison want to kidnap the Queen of England to do God knows what to her?
And he throws that in there somewhere.
Yeah. And also the Queen of England.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Yeah, because why not?
We were mentioning before how there's like no fighting in this movie. And it's all thanks to your two stars because they spent so much money and time getting Jean-Claude Van Damme and Raul Julia that the martial arts training was cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why there's not a lot of fighting in a movie called Street Fighter that's based on a fighting video game. And also, I think we saw something to where one of the actors was arrested for bringing steroids into the country. And so my guess is it was probably Dalsum. Probably brought the steroids in.
These don't work.
Yeah. He's very thin. Also, yeah. I think a lot of the budget probably went to the massage parlors everybody frequented in Thailand.
Yes. Yeah, that's
where
true.
They shot the movie.
Yeah. Of course, why not, you know?
Yeah.
When in Rome.
When
yeah,
in Rome.
Exactly.
And then it's funny kind of the character switch, like, because Ken and Ryu are fine with being heroes. And so many times Guile tries to play to their good nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when eventually Bison's palace starts falling and everybody's trying to escape. And Ken all of a sudden has a change of heart. And like, he's like, Ryu, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to go help get the hostages. He's like, no, man, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Wouldn't Ken be like one of the people who would go with him to go get the hostages instead of like try and pillage whatever he can and then leave and without trying to help anybody?
It's inexplicable. I don't know why they do the things they do in this movie.
Then he sees like Ken about to be attacked by Sagat and I almost said Vegeta. what's his name? Sagat's
Vega.
And he's looking at a TV monitor in Bison's office or whatever. And he's like, hey, Ryu, look out, man. Ryu, get out of there. Is that the cameraman yelling at us?
Very convincing. Yeah. Ken.
Come on, do it. Come on. It's like, how are you using this? Are we going to get a shot of Ryu?
Yeah. Well, anything else you guys want to lament about this movie?
In the short fighting scene at the end of the movie, Balrog was doing his thing, and then all of a sudden, he had boxing gloves on, like he does in the game. I'll give him that. Where the hell did they come from? He didn't have them. Then he had them.
Maybe he
was so stupid.
Maybe they're in his pocket. I don't know.
Yeah, those are like some JNCO jeans pockets right there. Hang on, let me get my boxing gloves real quick.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on.
And then
the other pocket.
And then the laboratory, as Bison kept alluding to.
Every time he said the laboratory, I thought of Dexter's lab. Get that laboratory.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too. But there was like a random shot of a zebrafish, and I even put that on here. I'm like, what the fuck is up with the zebrafish? Like, they're just like, oh, hey, let's put this fish in the laboratory. Like, okay, maybe they use the quote-unquote venom from that to give to Blanca. But then if they did that, then what the hell was the big bags of mutagen and everything else like that? Yeah. It honestly looked like great big bags of, like, unsolidified Jell-O mixture.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the watermelon and the lime mix. It's like, man, if they would have saved just some of the money that they gave Van Damme.
Exactly.
They could have done a lot better of a movie. You know, the pieces are there, sort of.
Yeah.
They just, yeah.
Yeah. We weren't paying for Van Damme's coke habit.
Yeah. And the massage
collars.
But,
that's what you got. You got cocaine and handies. From E Honda.
Yeah, exactly.
From E Honda.
Not just E Honda took a shift at the massage parlor.
Yeah.
No, as far as notes and stuff like that, I think that does it for me.
Cool. Yeah. Joe, you said near the end you had a few more things that you were going to plug in there in regarding some stuff that happens at the end. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the big thing was obviously that sexual harassment. I do actually have something that I found here last minute. So I'm looking at the Wikipedia article of Street Fighter in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bother to see this because I was trying to see who the cast of characters was as I was going along. There's towards the very bottom in this Wikipedia article, canceled sequel. It says, by 2003, plans were being made for a sequel, Street Fighter II.
Mm-hmm.
Rumored cast members included Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren. So we would have had another sucktastic movie with Lundgren and Van Damme in it.
Exactly. Dolph Lundgren would have played Akuma, probably.
And Holly Valance. And it says, in summary, the project never materialized.
Oh, darn. Oh, man. We were robbed. Do you think we would have gotten, Rise of Chun-Li if we would have gotten the second Street Fighter movie? I'm going to talk about whitewashing.
It's widely panned as one of the most worst movies of all time.
Yeah. Or is it The Legend of Chun-Li? I don't know. It doesn't matter. One of those.
At this point, it doesn't matter.
Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say, you had mentioned looking stuff up. For this episode, I did a little bit more digging than everyone else. I did, in fact, play Street Fighter the movie, the game for PlayStation. Really?
Nice.
I did. The movie or the game graphically is a lot like Mortal Kombat, where they tried to use the real body scans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. However, it lacked any of the decent gameplay or the graphics. Since it was on PlayStation, all the FMV, the full motion video on it was just severely compressed, and it didn't age well. But it was a crap game to begin with. Like, a lot of the older games, you could play and you're like, oh, it didn't age well, but it's still really good. This was not one of them. This is a direct extension of the movie. The game sucked. The movie sucked. Please don't play it. I played it. I played it for you, and it was a hot mess. It was just a hot mess.
Well, that's a nice surprise. Not gonna say I didn't expect that. Yeah. Oh, well. This movie has a lot going on because, like we said at the beginning, it is oversaturated with characters, not even spread throughout. It's oversaturated right from the jump. And you're expected to follow everything going on. And it's all mixed in with a lackluster plot. I mean, it's a pretty generic plot.
Yeah.
But your lackluster acting, wooden performances, terrible ADR, not great special effects, not up to par or up to snuff representations of well-beloved characters.
Uh-huh.
And it's just everything that it could do wrong, that something like Double Dragons or Super Mario Brothers did, they did, just maybe with not even with a bigger budget, but it made a profit because the Capcom really wanted to push for a December release. So maybe you got that Christmas crowd or the non-Christmas crowd, or, you know, but it definitely felt like a rushed movie, and under different circumstances, maybe it could have been better. We know now that they can make passable video game movies.
Uh-huh.
I think Mortal Kombat helped prove that the next year.
Yeah.
But all in all, the movie itself is just everything we just were talking about. It's not good. For some people, it's like a fun bad. For some people, it's a lousy bad.
Yeah.
But where we sit on it now, I think it just kind of is what it is. So per the usual of this show, can you guys pull out, I know probably maybe a couple things you kind of interwoven during the course of the episode, stuff you found good, but Joe, we'll start with you. What was good about this movie?
Well, I think I highlighted on one of the endearing traits of it, which were those Easter eggs. I mean, I'm not a gamer or anything like that, but to see the arcade game and to see the Capcom logo on the barrels and everything like that, that was a nice touch. I will say that. Second of all, I have to say that at least for some of the characters, they tried to at least write some kind of a background story with them. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that Chun-Li was not just portrayed as what she is in the video games, but they actually gave her a role of a journalist, which I can give props to that.
Yeah.
But you know, some of the other characters, you don't know exactly what they just come along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I probably would say about it is, some of the nuances of the characters, like the fact that M. Bison levitates, right?
That was
definitely a good touch. But for every single one of those touches, you've got, you know, where do the boxing gloves come from for Balrog? Mm-hmm. Or I have to go back to this over and over and over again. Hadouken.
That is
the signature of Street Fighter to me. Mm-hmm. That's what introduced me to Street Fighter, just hearing Hadouken with the fireball. Yeah.
Exactly.
Missed opportunity.
Right.
So
felt like I was playing the game. That was a good Hadouken joke.
Pretty good.
I could have threw my voice a little bit more, but I'm kind of bad rolling some allergies here. So
it's like if you do a Mortal Kombat movie and Scorpion doesn't say, "Get over here," you know, kind of thing.
Exactly. So I don't really have a lot of positive things to say on
that's fair. Honestly. That's all right. Yeah. Chris?
Jokingly, I want to say turning the movie off.
Oh, gotcha. That's fair. You don't have to have anything good about it. Sometimes it's harder to find something good. Yeah.
I actually do. And I am going to piggyback on what Joe said, because when you asked him, I'm like, oh, shit, I don't know if I can figure anything out. But those Easter eggs were kind of fun. You know, some of the moves from the game were omitted, like the Hadouken, which looked more like a on-set camera flash than anything.
Yeah.
But just seeing some of the moves from the game portrayed, like the tiger uppercut, You know, things like that. It was kind of cool to see some aspects of the game bleed through into the movie. There just wasn't enough of it for me. So definitely the Easter eggs, seeing some of those characters that I, you know, played hundreds of matches with against friends and random people in the arcade. You know, it was kind of cool to see when it was represented right, Zangief, Vega, stuff like that. But I think the cons of everything that we had talked about, especially with the racial profiling and stereotypical stuff like that, it just kind of outweighs it for me. So that's really where I stand as far as the good of the movie.
I think for me, you guys, it's so funny. We've been talking about Raul Julia's performance. I actually love his performance. It is exactly what I want in an over-the-top, hammy, dictator-type villain. And I love it because, by all accounts, Raul Julia was just such a joy to be on set. He was dying of stomach cancer while filming this movie. And he had his family on set. He did all of his own stunts. He was all in. The one person who would have been justified in throwing it and just phoning it in, and he just completely committed himself. Mm-hmm. And it was like this final love letter to his sons, because they loved the game and he did it for them. So while, it could have been better, and definitely the movie's not great, I really love his performance. And also the big Hoss fight between Zangief and E-Han.
The one that went on for like 15 minutes.
I was like, okay, this is pretty fun. And I actually like one of the character changes. E Honda in the game is Japanese, and then this, he's Samoan American. I actually kind of like that change. I think it kind of works. But other than that, everything else, like, I could never watch this movie again and be just fine.
I know Raul Julia's performance, between the four of us that we've seen, it's kind of polarizing. I too enjoyed it, but I think the enjoyment I get out of that the most is, like Matt said, even when he was dying and sickly and could have like phoned an end, he wanted to do this for his kids. And that's, at the end of the day, that's he knew he didn't have a lot of time left on this earth. And if anything, the final role he did was for the benefit of his kids, was so his sons could enjoy it. And at the end of the movie, it says,
Vaya con Dios.
It says, for Raul, Vaya con Dios at the very end. So that, I think, is a little bit of a glimmer on not a great movie.
Yeah.
Well, now I feel like an asshole. Thanks so much.
I knew when I was going to say that. And I'm like, I don't want to make them feel bad.
No,
at all.
That was no. But that's kind of a bow on it. Before, guys, thank you so much for being on with us. Again, Joe and Chris host From the Point podcast, which specializes in St. Louis Blues hockey. If you guys want to plug that real quick.
Go ahead, Joe.
With From the Point, you can find us on all social medias and, of course, on all podcasting outlets at From the Point PC. That's podcast. From the Point PC. And we are actually going to be recording episode 11 shortly.
Nice. Cool. I like it. Cool.
I'm excited to do it. So, but thank you guys so much for having us on.
Absolutely.
You know, take the plugs away. I don't even care about the plugs. I'm just so happy every time I get to talk with you guys. I wish I can do it more.
Same. It's great. I love, we've been able to connect through our podcast together, and we contact one another, you know, every so often about stuff. It's great to keep in touch, and it's great to have you guys on. Thank you both for making time, for being on, and just thank you for your efforts, and thank you for taking a bullet for us. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. Yes. But again,
it's a 50 caliber right there.
But thank you guys so much. We greatly, greatly appreciate your time. We greatly appreciate your encouragement and back end and your support. Always appreciate you guys are always excellent at just giving great feedback. So thank you guys so much.
Yep.
And until the next time, the house lights are up, the film's off the reel. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. We'll see you next time.